But first, let's look at the week in rural news with Kath McAloon. And Kath, more talk, we've heard a lot of this before, about how the Murray-Darling Basin is being funded.
The federal government has said that at the moment there's no money budgeted to run the Murray-Darling Basin after 2017. The government says there's funding to specifically implement the basin plan, but there's no money yet allocated for day-to-day operations of the largest river system in Australia. Now, the National Irrigators Council estimates that fees and charges that the government must pay on water buybacks for the environment will exceed $40 million a year, but the Parliamentary Secretary for Water, Simon Birmingham, insists that the government will pay up.
There are, of course, costs to holding environmental water. We recognise that. The Commonwealth is already the largest fee payer in the Murray-Darling Basin to states and other irrigation authorities as a result of that, and that will continue to be the case, and appropriate budget decisions will be taken to ensure that it is funded in future years.
Now, speaking of buybacks that the Commonwealth had of water to preserve the environment, we're actually going to find out how it's going to be spent.
This week, the Murray-Darling Basin Authority released its environmental watering strategy. Now, it sets goals for the use of all the water bought to return the river system to health.
So this is effectively the drought-proofing of the basin.
The authority's Jody Swearapick says that breeding of native fish, birds and vegetation and maintaining the connection between rivers are the key goals of this plan.
Just like farmers, the environment needs to use its water very efficiently. That's one of the things that's identified through the strategy, that we need to find ways of getting multiple outcomes from the amount of water that we have available to us. You know, we're working just like any other person who holds water and uses water in the basin to achieve those best outcomes.
Well, it's been pretty dry in the basin, but about a week ago, some water fell out of the sky, thankfully, in several states. What's been the upshot of that?
There were some decent falls in Western Queensland. Charleville and Cunnamulla set daily August rainfall records with more than 50 millimetres. And in New South Wales, in the Illawarra, there was up to 190 mils recorded in some places. But some dry areas of New South Wales only had patchy falls. And the Weather Bureau says it'll barely make a dent in drought-affected areas. And it's not expected to boost winter grain crops either, because the rain has come too late, but they won't go backwards. Grains analyst Hannah Jansen from ProFarmer Australia says if the rain hadn't arrived, the forecast wheat crop of nearly 25 million tonnes would have been significantly scaled down. She says that Queensland cropping areas got only half their average rainfall through to July, but the falls over the weekend mean that August rains will be back to average.
Darling Downs reached average rainfall, but they weren't as well treated as other parts of Queensland, so that's probably one area where they're really going to be looking for follow-up rains quickly. And the rains didn't seem to go much further past the central western region of New South Wales, so southern New South Wales and Victoria still definitely need more rainfall, particularly as we head into spring and the days start warming up and the crops really start developing quite quickly.
Well, let's go under the sea now, and a bit of a find off Western Australia.
An oil discovery off Western Australia's northwest shelf is believed to be the largest find in Australia in decades. Carnarvon Petroleum and Apache Energy found the oil 4.5 kilometres below the seabed while they were drilling for natural gas. It's about 180 kilometres north of Port Hedland. And Carnarvon Chief Executive Adrian Cook says the well, which is known as Phoenix South, is in an area that's been untouched for almost 20 years.
Actually a new oil province outside of the Carnarvon Basin proper. It's very lightly explored. It's a very large area. In fact, we have some 20,000 square kilometres of acreage holding here. Woodside and Shell are other major acreage holders in the area.
We'll have to see how that one goes. A lot more testing for that. But we also had comments from the resources industry this week in a submission to the Northern Australia White Paper, and the Minerals Council has had a go at the Greens.
The Minerals Council has singled out the Greens' proposal to remove the diesel fuel excise rebate for miners, and it's saying that this proposal by the Greens would amount to a super tax on Northern Australia. The Council attacks the Greens' claim that the 36 cents a litre rebate means that taxpayers are subsidising the mining industry.
Now, this is the same rebate that goes to farmers for off-road use, and I think it was introduced back in the 1950s, and it's always had support from both Labor and the Coalition.
And the Minerals Council's Chief Executive, Brendan Pearson, says that miners shouldn't have to keep defending this rebate.
It's like saying that a non-smoker is getting a tax subsidy because they don't pay tobacco excise. It's no subsidy. The Treasury says it's no subsidy. The Productivity Commission says it's no subsidy. The only people saying it are the Greens.
If you like painkillers, it's been a big week for Victoria.
Farmers in Victoria have been sowing Australia's first mainland commercial poppy crop after licences were received this week. Now, there's been trials of poppy crops in Victoria and also in the Northern Territory, but this is the first commercial crop that's been grown outside of Tasmania.
Yeah, and these are licensed to produce codeine and morphine through the poppies.
And there's massive expansion of people wanting more painkillers, so the poppy companies are sort of ramping up their productivity, and they're saying they need to be planting further afield than Tasmania. So one Tasmanian company, TPI Enterprises, has started distributing poppy seeds to nearly 50 farmers across Victoria. TPI's Jared Ritchie says that the new crops will be lucrative for farmers.
Look, at a farm gate value, assuming 10,000 hectares as an industry, talking potentially around $40 to $50 million growing alone. So this gives us the confidence to take more orders and to continue to invest in infrastructure and new jobs, continue to meet the growing demand.
Over in Western Australia, the focus seems to be on growing more canola.
Farmers in Western Australia, farmers north of Perth, in fact, are growing a record amount of canola this year. And Duncan Gray is from the grain handler CBH, and he says it's because of the popularity of genetically modified canola, which has been rising dramatically. Mr. Gray's been preparing for a record harvest at the Port of Geraldton, and he says that keeping the GM and the non-GM canola separate has taken months of planning.
The hectares have gone up quite significantly. We think there's probably 40 to 60,000 more hectares this year, which is the increase in the tonnes that we're starting to see. But we have seen an enormous increase in GM canola and a little bit of decrease in non-GM.
Now, there has been talk of sending refugees to Cambodia, but before they get there, they might be beaten to the punch by some Australian cattle.
Indeed, Cambodia is set to become our newest live cattle market with health protocols finalised and signed off on this week. The industry expects to ship an initial 10,000 feeder and slaughter cattle there. The Australian Livestock Exporters Council's Chief Executive, Alison Penfold, says that the market in Cambodia will be a small market, but she says it will be significant for northern beef producers.
We've seen across Asia a 115% increase in live cattle exports over the 2013-14 from the previous year. So adding Cambodia and hopefully in the short period of time Thailand as well, we certainly will have a large and important area of huge potential.
The Australian dairy industry has been in China this week.
The Australian dairy industry is on something of a charm offensive in China this week. They're doing all they can to get more support for a free trade agreement between Australia and China. And dairy farmers, as well as Australia's ambassador to China, have made presentations at a number of events happening in China this week. President of the lobby group Australian Dairy Farmers, Noel Campbell, says it's important that his industry isn't seen as a threat to the local Chinese dairies.
They see the Australian continent and say, well, there's a massive amount of land there that can be actually utilised for dairy. Well, we all know that that's not the case. We've got a significant domestic market here. About 55% of our current product goes to domestic product. So we're not going to all of a sudden flood their market and threaten their own domestic industry. We'd just like to be part of the whole dairy chain.
Some of the biggest news this week has been coming out of Iraq, concern about the civil war and the implications of that. And the United Nations is worried about farmers in Iraq.
Yeah, the United Nations says it's a really challenging situation for farmers in Iraq at the moment. The organisation estimates that about 40% of an estimated 1.2 million people who've been displaced by conflict in northern provinces of Iraq are from rural areas, and many of those are thought to be farmers. The Food and Agriculture Organization's representative to Iraq, Fidel El-Zoubi, says that grain farmers, who usually sell to the provincial government, haven't been paid for last season's crop and they won't be able to afford to plant for next season. He says farmers are also selling their livestock off because they can't afford fodder and vaccinations. And Dr. El-Zoubi says the olive harvest is in doubt because of a lack of workers in the conflict zones.
Every day there is a fight in a certain area. Yesterday there was an attack on the Mosul Dam. The valley of Mosul is an important agricultural area. Now it's a battle of, it's a real battle zone between the Kurdish forces and the ISIS.
Now in New South Wales, those who have orchards have had a bit of a win this week after a long battle over flying foxes.
The state government in New South Wales has announced some funding of $4 million to protect growers' crops from flying foxes. Growers pushed for 3 years for the netting subsidies to be extended beyond the Sydney Basin and the Central Coast to other areas of the state. And apple grower Rob Armstrong from Orange says this $4 million that the government's announced is a good start, but he says the money won't go far.
Any help from the government in regard to netting is a great help, but, you know, fixed netting costs about $50,000 a hectare, so $4 million is not going to go a real long way. We had a bad season about 4 years ago for flying foxes. They do make their presence known, but there's nothing to have sort of tens of thousands of them, and they can absolutely decimate an orchard in one night.
Now, we hear a lot about criticism of politicians' junkets, but one National Party MP has funded his own study tour.
The member for Mallee in Victoria's north, Andrew Broad, has just come back from a self-funded trade tour of Indonesia, which is Australia's third biggest agricultural market. And Mr. Broad says that one of the things he saw over there was Australian fresh milk selling for $7 a litre in some high-end Indonesian supermarkets.
This is interesting because it's been selling for prices like that in China as well. So there's clearly, if they can get that fresh milk over there, there's a fantastic...
People will buy it.
Market for it, a lot of money to be made.
Yeah, and Mr. Broad was also impressed with the high value that's placed on Australian infant milk formula in Indonesia.
And you know how you have those little tags that, you know, so you can't pinch clothing when you knock out of a, you know, a Rip Curl shop or something like that?
Mm.
They had those little tags zip-clipped onto the infant formula, so you couldn't take it off without making sure you definitely paid for it.
Well, there you go.
It's usually reserved for the high-end alcohol products, those sort of tags.
Yes, easy to nick a sarong, I suppose. Yeah. Not that I would. And finally this week, a very important French dung beetle has been introduced to the nation.
It has in the great southern region of Western Australia, and it's part of a Meat and Livestock Australia program to tackle bush flies across southern Australia. Now, this particular species is active in the spring, whereas existing dung beetle populations are generally active around Christmas or in the middle of winter. So this one will fill a gap there. And dung beetles eat the cattle dung, which flies would normally be breeding up in. So the goal is to reduce fly numbers. And while the release started this week, Rob Emery from the WA Department of Agriculture says that it could take 5 to 10 years for the full effect of this new species of dung beetle to be felt.
We'll be localising them on fresh dung with a cage, so we're going to make sure that the beetles are jammed in together so there'll be a party atmosphere in the dung pat, and hopefully they'll establish well.
Party, party, party in the dung pat.
Not the sort of party I'd like to go to.
No, bring your own air freshener. Kath, thank you very much.
Thanks, Tony.
Kath McAloon with the week's Rural News.